We're going to look at Sedra Vayishlach. And Millie, would you like to begin Vayishlach Yaakov?
We all understand Hebrew, yes? Is that all right? Yes?
Yeah, I've got a different one.
You've got one which is only in English. Would you like one?
No, sorry. Well, I might as well. I can read from you.
Vayishlach Yaakov.
Here. Right.
If I'm going to follow you, then I might as well try.
You found it?
Yeah.
Vayishlach Yaakov malachim lefanav el Esav achiv arza seir sede edom.
Okay, do you want to translate?
And Jacob sent messengers ahead of him to his brother Esau to Edom field.
Right. Now, what's happening is we've got the whole confrontation between Jacob and Esau. And in a sense, this is not just the meeting of two brothers whom we know are very angry with each other because Jacob took the blessings. It's something really more profound. We're talking here about the world, which is represented by Esau, and the Jew, represented by Yaakov. And there is a strained relationship. On one level, the world is powerful. But it's Jacob who somehow takes the spiritual blessings. How does Jacob get the spiritual blessings? It's in some sort of strange manner that Jacob gets this intense blessing that if you're counting up Nobel Prize winners, if you know, whatever you're counting up, somehow Jacob comes out on top. And out of all proportion to numbers or anything like that, and however much they try to get rid of them, there they are. You know, now they're all over the world. So there's this power in Jacob, a spiritual power. Nonetheless, there's a confrontation between Jacob and Esau. So how is Jacob going to deal with Esau? And what he has to do, ultimately, he has to try to effect a kind of transformation of Esau so that Esau accepts Jacob and agrees to the blessing going to Jacob and from Jacob coming to Esau, and in that way making an organic unity of the whole world. Now, that's the goal. That's the goal, that there should be a spiritual force coming from the Jew into the rest of society, and that everything should be integrated together in a wholesome way. Now here we're looking at it in the Torah in its sort of early form, an early stage of that. And there are intriguing concepts that we can come across and explore together. Okay, do you want to say the next verse, please?
ויצב אותם לאמור, כה תאמרו לאדוני לעשיו, כה אמר עבדך יעקב, עם לבן גרתי ואחר עד עתה, ויהי לי שור וחמור, צאן ועבד ושפחה, ואשלחה להגיד לאדוני למצוא חן בעיניך.
Okay, do you want to translate?
And I beseech you to tell my Adoni, how would I?
My master.
My master, Esau. This is what your servant Jacob is saying. I lived with Lavan, and
I delayed
until now, and I dwelled. Yes, that's right. And I had ox.
You can read the translation.
I know, but I can't. It's very small.
It's small.
Maybe somebody should read it.
Okay, I have acquired cattle, donkey, sheep, slaves, and slave girl. And I'm now sending word to tell my lord to gain favor in your eyes.
Right, okay. Now let's go back to these words. In Lavan Garti, I lived, I sojourned with Lavan. Rashi says a very intriguing thing here. Rashi says, Im Lavan Garti, I sojourn with Lavan, Aval Tariag Mitzvot Shamati, but I kept the 613 mitzvah. You see this word, galti, it's got the same letters as tariyat. Tav Resh Yud Gimel.
That's right.
And Tav Resh Yud Gimel is 613.
Yes.
Now, first of all, we have to say, but what do you mean? This is before the giving of the Torah. Where are the 613 mitzvot? But the sages in the Talmud, they have the belief that the patriarchs, in some spiritual way, understood what the 613 mitzvot would be and that they kept them.
Also the Shachrit, Ma'ariv.
That's right. So Avraham arranged Shachrit, and Yitzhak Mincha, and Yaakov Ma'ariv. Right. But then we have another question. All right, so let's say Jacob kept 613 mitzvot while he was with Laban. Why does he tell that to Esau? The way that Esau's character is depicted, he doesn't care about things like that. So why should Jacob tell him? So the answer that's given in Kabbalistic Hasidic texts is that really the goal that Jacob is looking for is transformation. His positive transformation in one way and Esau's transformation also. When he says, I lived with Lavan, now, Lavan is also the opposite of an atmosphere of keeping the 613 mitzvah. But nonetheless, he managed to do so. So he's saying, listen, my brother Esau, I stayed with Lavan, and during that time I kept the 613 mitzvah. I made this transformation in myself. Are you ready also? Have you made the transformation within you? Are you ready for the ultimate unity, which is what the creation of the world is all about? That we should be unified in love and affection, and that the teachings of the divine should pour through us. Are you ready for that? That's his question.
But he's not apologizing.
He's not apologizing.
No, he's not.
No,
the opposite. That's what
he's showing off as well.
I find it. If he cheated to get the mitzvah, to the blessing from his father, right?
Yeah.
How did he keep every mitzvah if he actually cheated to get?
Well, you see, this is the thing.
Didn't he actually steal the blessing from his brother by feeding him first?
The Torah sees the whole transaction as being legitimate. It's very interesting. The Christians, in their interpretation of the Bible, they say, oh, what a terrible thing. This is very bad, and that's why he suffered. The Jewish sages do not see that at all. And one of the ways that I would suggest that we look at it, imagine that you are a trained lifesaver. And there is a lake, and in the middle of the lake, about 200 yards away, you suddenly see that there's someone drowning. Now what do you have to do? At the side of the lake, there's a little boat. You have to run along, jump into that boat, a canoe or something, quickly get yourself to the middle of the lake, jump in and rescue the person who's there. The only thing is, there's someone else who you know can't swim, can't do this, can't do that. They are running ahead of you and they're going to try and get the boat. They also want to help. So they want to jump in the boat, take the boat. There's only one boat. And they won't do anything. The person will drown. So you run along and you push them out of the way. You do a rugby tackle. You get them down and you jump into the boat and you do what you have to do. Now, were you wrong to push this ineffectual person out of the way? Jacob can see, and Rebecca, his mother, can see that there's a special spiritual empowerment which Isaac is going to empower. Now, Isaac wants to empower Esau first. You know why? Because Isaac is an optimist. Isaac thinks that Esau is ready for this transformation, the same way that Jacob is an optimist at this point and is asking Esau, have you achieved this transformation?
Yeah.
And he's saying to him, I have. I've done my bit. Have you done your bit? He's not boasting. He's saying, I've got to the point where we are able to do things together for the benefit of the entire world, the whole of humanity. Now, Isaac wanted that to happen right at the beginning, but it was premature. Rebecca could see that that's not going to work. If Esau would have been given this tremendously powerful blessing, it would have had a totally destructive effect on him. It wouldn't have helped at all. The blessing Rebecca saw with the insight of a wise woman who had Ruach HaKodesh, she saw the blessing had to go first to Jacob, and then his power, his inspiration, will then transform the world, will transform Esau. But it's going to take time.
But this is how the sages see it.
That's
the,
right.
The narrator of the story in the Torah views it in a very negative way.
Not at all. There's not one negative thing said about it in the Torah.
He was cheating. This is how he came across.
There's no criticism whatsoever. You see, the Bible is not shy to criticize people. You know, such and such a king, Vayas hara be'enei Hashem, he did bad in the eyes of God, and things like that. Not a single word is said against Jacob in that sense.
Not against Jacob necessarily, against his mother.
Nothing is said against him. If you're talking about the biblical narrator.
No, because they misled the father, Isaac, and that's why...
The biblical narrator is not bothered. And in fact, a very interesting moment is that when Esau comes into Isaac, Jacob has been blessed, and Jacob goes off. And then Esau comes in and says, Father, I brought you the venison that you wanted, and now you can bless me. So his father says, what are you talking about? I'm your son Esau, and I've come so that you should bless me. So who was the person who was here just before whom I blessed, and he will be blessed? Gam baruch yeyeh. Like, he immediately affirms that blessing is for keeps. You know, so
he asks for another blessing.
He asks for another blessing, yeah, but the point is that Isaac says that blessing that went to Jacob, that blessing remains.
Could not be reversed.
Cannot be reversed.
How does he bless Esau? What does he bestow on him? I don't remember.
Material power.
Yeah.
Mishmane aretz tiyem
moshevecha. That's right, yes.
You'll have the fat of the land.
Yeah.
So when his brother comes out from being in the wild and hunting, and he's starving, and he asks for food.
Right, this is an earlier thing. Yes.
So, how is it put? Does it not say he stole his brother's...
Well, it doesn't say he stole, it says he says, sell your birthright.
Oh, sell your birthright.
You see, and in the book of Psalms, there's a historical psalm that makes fun of Esau. He sold his birthright for a bowl of food.
No. How can we say he stole it if he sold it? You know.
Not talking about the bracha, but about the bechorah.
Well, the bechorah and the bracha go together.
It goes together.
See, and Rashi says, when Esau realized that Jacob had taken the blessing, Esau said, "Oh, that's twice he's cheated me, right?" So Isaac says, "What do you mean twice?" He says, "Well, I was very hungry, and he said, sell me your birthright, and then I'll give you this food." And so Rashi says, oh, well, so it all worked out right. He sold the birthright, so that means Jacob has the birthright, and now Jacob gets the blessing. The blessing goes with the birthright. The birthright is a spiritual responsibility. The blessing is a spiritual empowerment to carry out that responsibility.
Now, this...
It's interesting that the blessing is never quantified, what the blessing is.
Yes.
It's not money, it's something else. It's spiritual empowerment.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
That's why when we say Jerusalem is holy, everyone says Jerusalem is holy. If we said the White Stone Pond is holy, everybody would say there'd be tanks
exactly.
around.
Exactly, and that's why anti-Semitism would never end. Maybe, eventually. Anyway.
When Mashiach comes.
Where was the Tehillim, the book of Psalms, it's mentioned, by the way?
I can't remember which psalm, but one of the psalms, it says, it mentions this.
The Bechora,
yeah.
Isolde, I remember that, yes, I don't remember where. Yeah. The Iso represents or the rest of the world or just Rome?
Well, in most specific terms,
or
Iso,
Muslims as well?
Well, in most specific terms, Iso is Rome.
Is Rome.
And so Rome is then the ancestor of the Christians.
Yeah.
And then we have Ishmael is the ancestor of the Arabs.
Of the Arabs.
And we also, so both of those come from Abraham's own family.
Yeah.
And then we have wider and wider nations, other nations, as listed, Ham, Shem, Yafet.
You don't start with Ham and Shem before?
Well, there's Ham and Shem as well. The Canaanites come from Ham. The Canaanites come from Ham.
So, and the East?
And then the East as well. The
Chinese, all those.
Yeah, they're also. Sin is one of the children of the children of Noah.
Of
the,
Noah, so that, yeah.
But this is not mentioned in the Bible, the East.
Well, it speaks about B'nai Kedem, the children of the East. And some of Abraham's children from a woman called Keturah, which the sages say is Hagar.
Yeah.
After Sarah died, he took Hagar back. But those children he sent to the east.
With gifts, yes,
with
I
gifts.
Remember this thing.
And the gifts are spiritual gifts,
yeah.
Yes. So there's a sense in which the religions of the East, Buddhism, Hinduism, also relate back to Jewish teaching. That's Abrahamic teaching. You see, Abraham is regarded as the author of the Book of Creation, Sefer Yetzirah.
Yeah.
And so that is a spiritual perspective on the world, that the world exists because of a flow of divine life force, the energy which, through the 22 letters, and the 10 sefirot, which makes together the 32 parts of wisdom, that's how God created the world. And so it's about creation, the way in which the world is a divine creation.
It's supposed to be the oldest, isn't it?
Well, in that sense.
It's the oldest,
yeah.
Manuscript.
Yeah, yeah. So there we have Jacob and Esau coming together with Jacob saying to Esau, "Are you ready?"
Yeah.
Oh, that's the force of this verse, as it's explained by the sages. The only thing is, verse 7, Michael, do you feel up to it?
This is
7,
Michael.
Yeah.
The messengers returned to Jacob with a report. "We came to your brother Esau, and he is also heading towards you. He has 400 men with him."
Okay. Right, and these 400 men are understood as an aggressive,
yes,
force. So this is, so he's not ready at all. He sees everything in simple black and white terms.
Yes.
And he wants to kill Jacob, which is what he said previously. That he's just waiting for his father to die. And when his father Isaac dies, he'll kill Jacob. He doesn't want to kill Jacob while his father's alive, because his father will be very upset, and Esau claims to respect his father, but once his father dies, then he'll kill Jacob. And that's what Rebecca realized, that he was thinking this, or she knew by divine spirit, by Ruach HaKodesh, and that's why she sent Jacob away, in order to, so he's been 22 years away.
So
with
Isaac died, Isaac died.
No, he hasn't died yet.
He's still alive.
Yeah, yeah, he dies at the end of the century.
Right. So why would he give the blessings before he died, all these years before?
He said he doesn't know when he's going to die.
He was already blind.
And he was blind, you know,
so he was old, yes.
He had to give the blessings.
Yeah,
I mean, that was something he wanted to do. So then Jacob splits his camp into two, and he says, all right, so maybe Do you want to take the next verse, verse 8, Michael?
Jacob was very frightened and distressed. He divided the people accompanying him into two camps, along with the sheep, cattle, and camels. He said, if Esau comes and attacks one camp, at least the other camp will survive.
Right, now obviously he's planning to fight. The sages say, why was he frightened and distressed? He was frightened that he and his wife and children would be killed. And he was distressed that he would have to kill other people. So there's gonna, if there's gonna be a battle, someone is gonna get killed. So this is disturbing. You know, either he's gonna get killed or Esau will get killed. But either way, it's not good. So it's a distressing idea. But the fact of splitting the camps into two, and that one of them is going to survive, indicates there's going to be a battle.
Of course, if he says he's coming with 400 people, they're not coming to embrace him.
Right, right. And then we have a prayer by Jacob. That's verse 10. Vayomer Yaakov.
ויאמר יעקב ואלוהי אבי אברהם ואלוהי אבי יצחק השם אומר אלי שוב לארצך ולמולדתך והיטיבה עמך קטונתי מכל החסדים ומכל האמת אשר עשית את עבדך כי במקלי עברתי את הירדן הזה ואתה הייתי לשני מחנות הצילני נא מידי אחי מידי עשיו כי ירא אנוכי אותו פן יבוא ויקני אם על בנים ואתה אמרת היטב היטיב עמך
Right. So there we have this prayer. The basic theme of the prayer is katonti. I am too small. For all the kindness that you've done, I'm unworthy. I'm unworthy of all this kindness. Very, very beautiful phrase. We're actually coming to the 19th of Kislev, which is next Monday, which celebrates the day that Rabbi Shneur Zalman, who had been attacked by the Mitnagdim, the opponents of Hasidism, and they tried to frame him so that he would be executed.
So he was released, wasn't he?
And he was released on the 19th of Kislev.
Yes.
So he said, Katonti, he wrote a letter to his followers, beginning with the words, katonti, these words, I am too small, I'm unworthy of the kindness that God has shown by releasing me. And he warned his followers not to crow over the Mitnagdim. The Mitnagdim had been defeated in this attempt, and he said, don't say anything, be nice to them, and maybe with the help of God, their hearts will change and they will have a more positive attitude. And it's a famous letter, this letter beginning with the word katonti. I'm small, I'm unworthy.
Did they attack him physically, the Mitnagdim?
Well, they did better than that. He had been sending money to the land of Israel to support the Hasidic community in the land of Israel. They got hold of the records of the financial transfer. And they said, look at this, he's sending money to the Ottoman Empire, which was at war with Russia.
Yeah.
So he's a traitor. So traitor, I mean, that's
can't
a, you
bear
don't...
to hear the stories about Jews that do such things. It happened the second time. I mean, it is so sick. And this is supposed to be a religious people. Absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah, and they've never apologized.
And some of them still have a thing about Chabad. I keep hearing it. I mean, it is so sick.
Yeah. Well, Ashreinu Matov Chokim. You know, there's like different levels. You know, there's the world hates the Jews, the Jews hate the Chassidim.
I think the Jews.
Well, you get this. I mean, they're still, you know, in Jerusalem, they're still upset with Rome because they haven't been paid the bill for the Last Supper.
Well, at least they don't kill each other like the Shiites and the Sunnis.
That's true.
Oh, but in this case, they wanted the Tsar to kill him.
To kill the...
Yeah, they wouldn't do it to themselves, but that was their intention.
Yeah. Yeah, and Rabbi Shneur Zalman said it was absolutely remarkable that he was released. He said it was like an open miracle that he was released. And that day has become the Rosh Hashanah of Hasidism. That's the new year of Hasidism.
So it happened during Hanukkah?
Well, it's the 19th of Kislev, and Hanukkah is 6 days later, 25th of Kislev. So it's a very beautiful day. And, So here we have prayer. So before, we have Yaakov being ready to fight. And over here, he prays. And then he does a third thing, which is in verse 14.
But Tali is also complaining to God, right? He told him, you promised me.
Well, it's interesting. He does speak to God in a very familiar way. And that is a mark of the Jews, that we have this familiar way of speaking to God.
Moses on Mount Sinai.
Moses, definitely.
Yeah, Moses on Mount Sinai.
All of us, we complain.
Yes. Why? Yeah, the rabbis in the Talmud.
He questioned and
Abraham
was
arguing.
A direct argument.
Yeah, Abraham arguing with God over the people of Sodom. Yeah. That's we have this close relationship with the divine. I mean, this.
We question.
We question, we argue. In the 13th century,
unlike Christianity.
That's right. In the 13th century, a Meshumad, a Jewish convert to Christianity, took a whole lot of such passages of the Talmud, showed them to the Pope, and said, look at this. The Jews are heretics because of the familiar way they speak to God or about God. They say the divine presence, the Shekhinah, weeps every day at the destruction of the temple. How can they say such a thing? And so that was an accusation against the Talmud. And as a result, they had the dispute in Paris, which led to all the volumes of Talmud, manuscript volumes of Talmud that they could find, being burnt in a huge fire. 24 cartloads of books were burnt. As a result of that, this trial in the 13th century. And it came because of accusations of the familiar way that Talmud speaks about God. It's an apartment. After the destruction of the temple, God only has the four cupids of Jewish law. Similar, that kind of statement. I think there are about 29 statements of this type that this Meshumad had found. Very tragic. Now, and as a result, Torah learning moved out of France. It moved eastwards to Germany, then to Poland. So in the time of Rashi, France had been the foremost country in Europe in terms of Torah study. But then it moved. Right, so then we have line 14, verse 14, another strategy. Alan?
After spending the night there, he selected a tribute for his brother Esau from what he had with him. The tribute consisted of 200 female goats, 20 male goats, 200 ewes, and 20 rams, 30 nursing camels with young, 400 cows, 40 bulls, 20 female donkeys.
That's an unbelievable amount of stuff.
And 10 male donkeys.
Right. So
this was a real accident from wherever he was. I mean, he built an absolute city.
Yeah. Yeah, this is an amazing set of animals that he's sending.
It's a hell of a lot.
But here you see a third strategy. He's got three strategies. The first is be ready to fight. The second is pray to God. And the third is use political
appeasement.
That's right.
Bribery.
Bribery politics are bedfellows.
Well, in the end, it worked. So.
It all worked. Well, and then he has a spiritual battle. Now, it's very interesting. You see, in a sense, this is really talking to each of us.
Yeah.
In our confrontation with the world, first of all, you know, we have to be ready to fight. We have to be ready to stand up for ourselves. Don't take anything lying down. On the other hand, we also have to keep our hotline with God going, you know. There's some intriguing joke, I can't quite remember the details, but it has to do with someone visiting the Israeli Prime Minister. And it's a joke that must have emerged when there was the concept of the hotline. There was the hotline between the American president and the Russian president.
The red telephone.
The red telephone, oh, yes. Where the line, then the, yes. The phones were so difficult to use, so that was the line was open all the time. So any time the president, Kennedy, whoever it was, could pick up the phone and speak to Khrushchev or whoever, I can't remember who. And so a joke from that period is about someone visiting Israel. And also, you know, there's some sort of, you know, hotline kind of thing, an array of phones. But the phone lines are very expensive. You know, this one is to the American president, you know, that costs $20 a minute. And this is to the Russian leader, and that's also, you know, $30 a minute. And this one is to God. Oh, how much is that? It's a local call. So
this is when he wrestles with the...
This is where he wrestles with the angel.
And I love that bit, yes.
Yeah. All right, so now let's move on to the wrestling with the angel. So we have to go over the page.
Ah, first he says...
He tells the servants, to give the presents to Esau. Ah, let's look at line 23.
Yes.
Or maybe start line 22. Yes?
Do you want to read it? In English, in Hebrew?
Okay. He set the gifts ahead of him and spent the night in the camp. In the middle of the night, he got up and took his two wives, two handmaids, and his 11 sons, and sent them across to Jacob. The Jacob River, Shallows.
Yabuk. Ma'avar Yabuk.
Yabuk.
After he had taken them and sent them across, he also sent across all his possessions.
Right. So there he has sent his wives and children across the river. Now that's an
interesting... safety.
Well, I'm going to come on to that in a minute because now he is left alone. And so we'll come back to that, whether it's to safety or not to safety. Okay, so Millie, verse 25.
Vayivater Yaakov levado, vayavek ish imo ad alot ha-shachar. Vayera ki lo yachol lo, vayiga bekaf yerecho,
vateka
kaf yerech Yaakov behavko imo. Vayomer shalcheini ki ala ha-shachar.
Verse 27.
ויאמר שלחני כי עלה השחר ויאמר לא ישלחך כי אם ברכתני.
Okay, so first of all, can you translate from line 25? Wait a minute. The letters are so small. I know that. Let me find.
Oh, here, Michael has it.
Yeah. I have a bigger version.
Yeah.
From where do you want from?
25.
Verse 25. Jacob remained alone, a stranger appeared and wrestled with him until just before daybreak. When the stranger saw that he could not defeat him, he touched the upper joint of Jacob's thigh. Jacob's hip joint became dislocated as he wrestled with the stranger. "Let me leave," said the stranger. "Dawn is breaking. I will not let you leave unless you bless me."
Okay, so that's where we got so far. So here he is wrestling with this stranger. I mean, it calls him a man. It just says a man. But it's clearly a mysterious man. It's a mysterious figure.
Yes.
And the sages tell us
It's an angel, isn't it?
This is an angel.
Yeah.
And in fact, it's the angel of Esau. It's Esau's own guardian angel.
Oh, that's interesting.
That Jacob is wrestling with.
With, of course.
Jacob's wrestling with Esau's angel. So in other words, on some spiritual level, the conquest of Esau is taking place now.
Yes.
In this wrestling match.
That's fascinating.
And it's a very difficult wrestling match, as we'll see, or we have seen, because he is, the angel has touched the thigh of Jacob, which has wounded it. But nonetheless, Jacob is still more powerful and is able to hold this angel and not let it go.
That's very profound. So you can actually wrestle with an angel of God and you overcome him.
Mm.
What does it say about humanity? This is amazing.
Well, what does it say about the Jewish people?
I mean, yes.
That's why he gets the name Yisrael.
Yisrael.
Ki sarita im Elokim, because you wrestled with God. You struggled with an angel. You struggled with something divine. And that's the word, that's the name Yisrael. It's an amazing concept. We're a mythical people.
And they called that the Makom.
I was discussing with my pupils in school, the Lubavitch High School, proofs for the existence of God.
Yes.
So there are all kinds of philosophical proofs.
Yes, yes.
So one girl said, the existence of the Jewish people is a proof for the existence of God.
What a clever girl.
Yeah.
Do you know the work of Art Green?
Yeah. I know him.
Yeah, because I missed his talk. I saw
him
for
he was him.
Half an hour he was here. I have some books, so he is now.
Yeah, he wrote a book on Rabbi Nachman.
Yes, but he was talking about God and how we perceive God. Very interesting man.
Indeed. So there is this wrestling, and now the angel says, let me go because dawn has risen.
Yes.
And he says, I'm not going to let you go until you bless me. Okay, so who wants to say next? Michael read the English, so Saul, do you want to read the Hebrew or verse 28? Vayomer elav mashmecha.
Vayomer elav mashmecha, vayomer Yaakov. Vayomer lo Yaakov yamer roshimcha, ki im Israel. כי שרית עם אלוקים ועם אנשים ותוכל. וישאל יעקב ואומר, אגיד אנה שמך, ואומר, למה זה תשאל לשמי, ואברך אותו שם.
Right.
ואומר יעקב שם מקום פניאל, כי ראיתי אלוקים פנים אל פנים, ותנצל נפשי.
Okay, Alan, would you like to read that in English? That's line...
Oh, I'm going back, sorry. From Jacob.
So that is from verse 28. What is your name?
What is your name? Jacob. Your name will no longer be said to be Jacob, but Israel. Israel, you have become great, Sar, before God, man. You have won. Jacob returned the question. If you would, he said, tell me what your name is. Why do you ask my name? Replied the stranger. He then blessed Jacob. Jacob named the place Divine Face. He said, I've seen the divine face to face, and my soul has withstood it. The sun rose and was...
No, we haven't done that yet.
Yeah,
okay.
So now, he is wrestling, and the idea that he has prevailed in this struggle with the angel of Esau is that the angel tells him, your name will be changed to indicate your power over the over divine forces and over human forces. Now let's come back to the question of where did he send his wives and children across the Yabok River. So there's a very interesting discourse by the Lubavitcher Rebbe that was said in 1982. And he says there, they're different opinions. Most opinions say he sent them to safety, which is what you might expect. But on the other hand, the purpose of our existence in this world is not to retreat to safety. It's to be in the thick of things. And the way it comes out from this fascinating discourse is that the wives and children go towards Esau, towards where Esau is, but they are safe in the sense that Jacob is wrestling with the angel, and they have the responsibility to transform Esau. And that's their power. They're empowered to somehow deal with Esau in the sense that, for example, we, the Jewish people, we're involved with the world and with the struggles of the world, whether it's direct confrontation with antagonists or just simply cultural borders where, you know, we're standing on the border and it can quite easily happen that we, you know, drift away over the other side and our Jewish identity disappears or dissolves or is diluted, and yet we are there, and really this is something where we should be retaining our Jewish identity and communicating the spiritual teachings that we have at our hearts and which we can transmit to everyone in the world. So therefore, the Rebbe says, a better interpretation is another view, that they went towards Esau while Jacob is wrestling with the angel. And we have great sages who in different ways have wrestled with angels. And that's that spiritual force which is at the heart of Judaism. You know, when you look at Jewish texts, Jewish teachings, whether it's Talmudic texts or the Kabbalistic texts, there's a tremendous energy there, incredible energy. And we're able to somehow, you know, come to the edge of these powerful streams and take a little drink of water. It's something very powerful. And so then we have the thing about Vayizrach lo HaShemesh. Would you like to read that, Millie? That's verse 32.
Vayizrach lo HaShemesh kasher avar et פנו אל, והוא צולע על ירחו. על כן לא יוכלו בני ישראל את גיד הנשה אשר על כף הירח עד היום הזה, כי נגע בכף ירח יעקב בגיד הנשה.
Okay, Michael, do you want to translate that, please?
I'll do that. And the sun rose,
right,
as כאשר עבר את פנו אל. When
it's verse 32.
I think it's on the other page.
No, you see, he's looking at the.
No, looking at it's not here.
One second.
Levin got up early.
No.
He was limping because of his tie.
Oh, it's, you know what? It begins at near the end of a line. Look, Millie, see where I'm pointing? It's near the end of a line. There's line 31. Yeah,
he was limping because of his thigh. Yes?
Yes.
Yes.
The Israelite therefore do not eat the displaced nerve on the hip joint to this very day. This is because the stranger touched Jacob's thigh on the displaced nerve.
All right, so what's this saying?
It's saying, well, we know about that there is a...
sciatica
nerve.
Yeah.
Is it what it is?
I think so.
Whatever it is, I know that you don't eat it from a lamb or from...
What an amazing thing. This spiritual experience, 3,000 years ago, is translated into the modern kitchen.
The kosher.
Yeah, but why does it say stranger? He gave him a blessing.
What?
He said a stranger touched it.
Well, that's Kaplan's translation, because you know that it doesn't actually say stranger in the Hebrew at all. It says a man, and then it just says in the third person, you know, someone, he.
Yeah.
It doesn't define it.
Yeah.
So in English, you have to put who it is. So
it doesn't even say he. He said kinaga.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah, it doesn't. But the idea that something so spiritual can be translated into something so practical. Now that is really the Jewish thing. That very, very exalted spiritual concepts get translated into a practicality.
Symbolic.
It's also in relationship to what you just said, the symbolic. People say, why do we need to keep kashrut today? Because it's symbolic also. Yeah, this is one of the reasons. Not yet?
Well, a symbol is a very interesting concept. Yes. Now, are symbols real? For example, there are symbols of friendship, right? So let's say it's Hanukkah, people send Hanukkah cards to each other, something like that. So what does that mean? So the Hanukkah card is an expression of friendship. I like you, so I'm sending you a Hanukkah card. Is it a symbol or is it a reality? I'm very pleased. There's a certain person, I received a Hanukkah card from them. That's the way we communicate together once a year. He sends me a Hanukkah card, I send him one. That's a nice connection we have together. And occasionally we meet as well, have a coffee or something. So the symbol is actually a reality. The symbol isn't, you know, there are symbols which are not the real thing. If you're trying to say, you know, there are 500 buses which travel every day in a certain part of London, and you make a sign, you know, 500B, so this is a symbol on the piece of paper. But then there's realities as well, and there are symbols which express and contain that reality. So the fact that we eat kosher food, which is expressing many different concepts altogether, and this is one element of kashrut. So this is something to do with our whole history and our whole power and our nature, our identity, the name Yisrael, and the danger of this power. The very fact that Jacob was able to wrestle with the angel led to the fact that the angel was able to wound. At a later stage, he gets cured. But for a certain time it was a wound, and that's what we're remembering, with the laws about kashrut and not having the rump of the animal unless that nerve has been taken away, which in England they don't do. It's a very difficult process. In Israel they do it. There's skilled porgers.
What part of the animal is that?
It's the rump. It's in the rump. So therefore we can't have rump steak.
Is it also considered the hip?
Well, the rump is like the hip of the animal. Yeah, yeah.
I thought that in this parsha, it's also, it's not here, is it? When he put the stones.
No, that's last week's parsha.
That was last week.
Yeah. Okay, so now we have the effect of this all-night struggle. And that's the next morning, verse 1. Who are we up to? Is it back to Millie? Vayisa?
Vayisa, Yaakov, Enav, Vayera, Vihine, Esav, Ba, Veimo, 400 Ish, Vayichat, Et Hailadim, Alea, Veal, Rachel, Veal, Shtei, Ashfachot, Vayasem, Et Ashfachot, Veet, Yaldehen, Rishona, ואת לאה וילדיה אחרונים, ואת רחל ואת יוסף אחרונים. יוסף?
יוסף, his son.
Yeah. Oh, Rachel has.
She already had Yosef.
Yeah.
God, I'm really lost it. Okay, so my memory is going. והוא עבר לפניהם, וישתחו ארצה שבע פעמים, עד גשתו את עד אחיו.
Okay, so do you want to translate this? This is verses 1. Jacob looked up.
Jacob looked up and saw Esau approaching with 400 men. He divided the children among Leah, Rachel, and the two handmaids. He placed the handmaids and their children in front, That's human shields, that is. Leah and their sons behind them, and Rachel and Joseph to the rear. Jacob then went ahead of them and prostrated himself 7 times as he approached his brother.
Right. Now, there's a very interesting comment.
There's something about the 7 as well. Why was it 7 times? And what's significant about 7?
Well, that's, I mean, 7 has a power, which, you know, the fact that there being 7 days, there's a spiritual power.
This is the reason he did it 7 times. Mm.
And now, Shaul Vayarat.
Vayarat's a subject of Torah, Vayarkeu, Vayipol al Tzavuro, Vayashkeu, Vayashkeu, Vayivku.
Okay, 1 second. So let's just translate that. That's a very powerful verse.
Vayaretz 4. Esau ran to meet them. He hugged Jacob and throwing himself on his shoulders, kissed him. They both wept.
Right. Now that is an amazing thing. Can you see the word Vayishakeu in the Hebrew? Is there something funny about it?
Vayishakeu.
Yeah, can you see it?
Yes, there are those dots at the top.
Dots.
What?
In the Torah scroll.
Yes.
There are no vowels.
Yes.
But these dots are there in the Torah scroll.
Why is that?
Here, in number 5.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah. 7 of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. On every letter. Yes. On every letter there's a dot. Yeah. So it's like, it's to bring out something intense about this word, Vayishakeu, and he kissed him. So Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said...
Is it like the drops of tears?
Well, he said, we know that usually Esau hates Jacob, but on this occasion, he actually honestly cared about him and kissed him. You know, at this moment, it's a moment of sincerity. And really, this is a foretaste. This is a foretaste of an ultimate goal of the unity of humanity in a spiritual way, with everyone being connected together in the right way, with teachings, divine teachings from God pouring through, and the awareness that this divine teaching comes from God to Moses on Mount Sinai, and from Moses to a chain of sages, down to us in our generation, and then reaching through us to the world around us. And that unity is expressed here with this Vayishakeu, and he kissed him. Even though Esau, after that, you know, it's not so easy, and Edom and Seir, there were battles later on. But nonetheless, this is a foretaste of the future. And this is really what Rebekah wanted, that the blessing should go to Jacob, and from this should ultimately come about a true unity in the whole world. So that's this powerful verse.
So in the scroll, we would see these dots.
These dots, yes, yes.
Amazing, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, so if you're able to see, they lift up the Torah at the end of the Torah reading, and you might be able to see the 4 dots, these dots on each letter.
There is another time where we have something on top.
Yeah, yeah.
Was it last month or 2 months ago? Because our rabbi asked us to come up and we would each...
With a reason.
She came and asked if we wanted to see. Because
I see, right.
There were these triangles. And I'm sure it was in the last couple of months I went up to look.
I think you mean an upside down nun, but that would be...
She also said it was unusual. And,
it's an upside down nun, and it is in Vayihi bin Sa'aron. It's in the book of Bamidbar. It's in Numbers, so it would be in the. It would be quite a while ago.
Okay.
It would be in the spring. It would be in the spring. But there, you know, there are just occasions.
Yes, occasionally.
There are extra symbols in the Torah.
Yeah. No, I can't. I remember her asking us if we wanted to come and see, because it was unusual. This is another unusual.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, so now... we have... what?
They spilled the paint.
Too much ink.
Yes.
Well, and then that got transmitted down to the generation. Yes,
exactly. For generations.
Yeah. Chinese whispers.
Yeah. All right, so now we have the next verse, verse 5. Whose go?
וישאת אנו ויאר את הנשים ואת הילדים ויאמר מי אלה לך ואומר הילדים אשר חנן אלוקים את עבדך ותגשן השפחות הן וילדיהן ותשתחוון ותיגש גם לאה וילדיה וישתחוו ואחר ניגש יוסף ורחל ניגשו וישתחוו.
Right, okay, so translate please. That's from verse 5.
They are the children who God has been kind enough to grant me, replied Jacob. The handmaids approached along with their children, and the woman bowed down. Leah and her children also approached and bowed down. Finally, Joseph and Rachel came forward and bowed down.
Now, it says Leah and her children in the text. Well, Rashi says, where was Dina? Dina is a daughter of Leah. It's as if here that's it's mentioning right. Just the sons.
That's right, yes.
Yeah, but it did not specify every name.
It's true, but the way that Rashi reads it and the sages in the Talmud is that Leah is only showing her sons. Not her one daughter. She's got six sons and one daughter.
She was probably very pretty and she was worried.
Yes.
Really?
She was. Well, it was Jacob who was worried.
Oh, Jacob.
He was worried that Esau would look at Dinah and be attracted to her, and then there would be problems.
Does it happen later?
Wasn't that thing we went to at JW3 that did that work in progress? Wasn't it about Dina?
Yeah, go on.
I don't know what you're talking about, Michael. I don't remember anything.
So what did it say? Go on.
No, it was a musical thing that we went to.
Darling, I don't remember, and it's irrelevant, I don't remember.
Well, it might be relevant, but you can't
remember. No, for me it's irrelevant, because if it was relevant, it would stick.
I'm not so sure. We forget the most important thing. No, there's a fascinating comment by Rashi.
It's true.
Where was Dina, he says. Jacob hid her away because he was frightened that Esau would look at her and get attracted to her.
Yeah.
And this was a terrible mistake. Oh. Because Dina could have married Esau and transformed him completely. Even a man like Esau, he marries the right girl, she puts him on the right path.
But
is that what Rashi said?
Yes.
But they were very close. It wouldn't have been...
Brothers. They were
brothers.
Well, she was his niece. Uncle. She was a niece.
Yeah, he was her uncle.
In Jewish law, an uncle can marry a niece.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, in English law, not, but you can somehow get dispensation.
You can marry your brother's children. First cousins can marry.
First cousins can marry anyone.
Anyway, but it's an uncle.
But here is an uncle marrying a niece. So in Jewish law, an aunt can't marry a nephew, but an uncle can marry a niece. Mm. So that's... Now, the point is, according to the sages, if Esau would have married Dina, he would have been directed in the right way.
So the whole world would have taken a different turn.
Absolutely.
What can we do?
And as a punishment to Jacob, because he didn't allow Dina to marry Esau, we have the whole problem
with
of Shechem.
With Shechem and
yes,
Hamor. Yes,
that's right. So she gets seduced by a man in Shechem and that whole problem. So that is seen of Jacob not realizing the spiritual power that Dinah had, which could have been used in a good way, transforming Esau. And here again, you see, we have the whole interaction between the Jew and the world. And it's very interesting, that statement is made in the Talmud thousands of years ago, 1,500 years ago. But the Lubavitcher Rebbe quoted the concept of the power of Dinah when he began the contemporary tremendous empowerment of women in the whole task to change Jewish society, to inspire it with what Judaism is all about, and this, all the shluchim and the shluchot, they are around the world, thousands of shluchim, because the shluchot, the women, are willing to live in Beijing or in wherever it might be, and running these Chabad houses, sometimes under extremely dangerous conditions.
I know.
As we saw, unfortunately, with Mumbai. But the courage of these women around the world is amazing. But that comes directly because the Lubavitcher Rebbe empowered them to do that and to see that as meaningful. And he took figures like Dinah and the power of Dinah, that Dinah could have transformed Esau. So that's a very important message to us. Mm. Well, so there, and so
also, he doesn't want to go in the same way that Esau does. He's trying to.
He can't go the same way, because if Esau goes the same way with him,
yeah.
In fact, Esau will somehow conquer him. You know, Esau has not been permanent.
So he says thank you, and he wants to go a different, a separate
way. He has
way.
To act. You know, you see here a whole political thing of how delicately you have to deal with certain situations, that you know you have to walk between the raindrops. Well, listen, that is a basic picture of the Jew in the world, and here it is in the context of our great ancestor Jacob, who is the ancestor of the Jewish people, and the kind of spiritual struggles and the goal of a positive transformation of the world, and there's a kind of a foretaste of that goal, and also a hint that the power of womanhood is very important in that whole process, needs to be utilized.
L'chaim. L'chaim, Ben Mazal Tov.
Thank you.